weaving its web, but as the traditional singers join the fray, that web weaves together classical orchestration and electronic beats into something entirely hypnotic.
Mm-hmm. But before we go on, something that's hypnotic is the top of clock.
7 o'clock, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting, Douglas, from Queen's University.
Carruthers Hall.
Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
Not bad.
7 o'clock. You know, if you don't throw that Queen's University in there, or that's Carruthers Hall.
Yeah. Nobody knows.
I was like, what?
They're not going to find us. Why and we're broadcasting so much that they,
did I say 101.9?
I hope so.
I think I did.
But you can also find it on www.cfrc.ca.
Yeah, we're there too. You should go there. Have you been there, Doug?
To where?
cfrc.ca.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. I did it 5 minutes ago on your computer.
No way, you did not.
Anyway, now you just talked about how this movement that Dirksen has on...
Let the web pull you in. This is Spider Dance.
Thank you.
Douglas.
Yes.
That was the spider dance.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get that?
I could image, yeah.
All right. You thought, hey, spiders?
Yeah. Well, if you think about it.
I kind of thought, spiders. So it's an intricate weaving she's put together there with her orchestral powwow. So what Dirksen has achieved with this album is more than just great music. It's a blueprint of how traditional culture can lead classical orchestration into the future, rather than just being a footnote to it.
And that's what you were saying earlier.
What did I say?
Yeah, not just pigeonholing people.
Oh, yeah. Typecast. Mm-hmm. Typecast the First Nations.
Or making
not only in Canada, but in over there in the U.S. too.
Okay. But that, like you said, a footnote.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't say that. That's what this is.
Anyway, well, you can find Chris Dirksen's entire catalog. It's great. Just go to Chris Dirksen. .com.
Hmm.
Chris is C-R-I-S. Anyway, that's good. So I think that this is highly recommended. And Rachel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel. Rachel.
And we want to thank everybody for being on a sonic journey today. Went right over the top of the hour.
It was just a wild one, right?
That was good. Yeah.
As they say, trippy.
Yeah. Now, here's a statement that I picked off one of the sites about what Chris Dirksen did. It said, keep your ears open and your heart tuned to the beat.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's our dedication to Chris Dirksen, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if you have any thoughts, give us a shout. Aboriginal Voices at cfrc.ca. Sean, I'm just wondering, what other news do you think you might have there before we go on with the rest of the show tonight?
I don't know. I had heard something on their Facebooks, and it was to the effect that Tantu Cardinal was in fact not Indigenous, but now that must have been just a one-off thing. Because that's all I'm seeing now is that, yeah, she is.
Mm.
So I guess it's no real news.
Okay, but it is news in a sense because, you know, Queen's University went through this with a number of people on staff students. Well, not all of them. Some of the people who are named in there, Indigenous.
I heard the names,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't surprise me.
Okay. Good. But how
but
often
the one
is
that
this
did surprise me, Tom King.
There you go.
That was a surprise. I don't know. Apparently it wasn't a surprise to anybody else.
Was it a surprise to him?
No. Apparently not.
Okay.
He was like, yeah, no, I'm out.
Okay. I guess, I don't know.
I don't know. I think he might have been, blackmailed too. I think.
Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's part of his book. Book come to life.
But it's interesting how, who was the prof from Calgary University?
I don't know.
I'm just thinking that she came and talked about that here at Queen's. And
then she was outed.
No.
Oh, no?
No.
Oh.
No. But... she was struggling with the fact that it's hard to decide, yes, you're in and no, you're not in.
How is it hard?
Well, if you have ancestry.
Oh, stop.
Where do you, that's exactly what she asked.
Anyways.
Where do you stop?
So I just wanted to drop a thing. Are we leaving soon?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Enough about that.
Okay.
Foolishness.
Something else.
We jump ahead
mm-hmm.
and say that down on territory, down to how many kilometers? How far is it? About a 40-minute drive?
40-minute drive, okay.
About a 40-minute drive west?
Yes.
Yeah, west.
West of where we're sitting,
west
yes.
of where we're sitting, yeah. And you can go and see cottagers and Indians.
Oh.
So look it up. It's mm-hmm. it's on the interweb someplace. Cottagers and Indians on the Tyendinaga Mohawk territory.
Mm-hmm.
If at all you have a chance, there's only 4 days left, so try. So tomorrow and then Saturday, like mm-hmm. it goes from tomorrow to Saturday.
And I understand, you got to correct me if I'm wrong
from
here.
From 7.
That on Saturday, that the author of the
Saturday,
the play
it's going,
is
well,
be
it
there.
Doesn't matter if he's going to be there or not.
Oh, okay.
Just come and see the show. Why do you got to be like that, Doug?
Well, because you get to see the show.
Oh, we're going
to
go on the day the author is there. No, just come.
Okay.
There's actors there pouring their heart into it.
Oh.
They're very souls. They're very souls. And then, like, people aren't going to come because that guy is going to... Well, if he's not there, well, we won't go until
goodness.
He's there.
Yeah. Well,
no.
You probably
no,
go twice.
Go, you get, buy two tickets. Buy four tickets. But anyways, no, you go because these
it's
two
good.
People are doing a, it's a good show.
Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to hear from
you. It's a good show, regardless of whether Drew Hayden Taylor is there or not. But yeah, he will be there on Saturday,
okay.
From what I hear.
Mm-hmm. He'll be impressed.
I hope so.
Oh, I think from...
If not...
If they've impressed
we'll have
you...
We'll have something to talk about out back.
No, but if they've impressed you, then he's going to be really impressed.
Goodness sakes, have they impressed me.
Mm-hmm. That's good news.
Arthur and Maureen.
Oh, okay. That's not their cottager's
name.
That's
their cottager's names.
Okay.
That's the character names.
That's good.
Was that enough? Is anybody going to come? I think you should come. Anybody that can hear me right now should stop everything that they're doing.
No.
They
should.
They
have to finish listening to the show tonight.
No, stop. Go to the internet. Buy tickets.
Then they're going to miss the rest of the show.
No. Well, I mean, come on,
it might take
Doug.
You that long.
Really, what, Doug? No.
Me? Yes. Anyway, that's good. All right. I have a song, and tomorrow there's a special teaching workshop day about Indigenous health, and I get to go to that.
Oh, yeah, good for you.
And in a couple of weeks, I'm hoping that we'll have a number of items.
Sounds riveting.
It is to us.
Sounds riveting.
Remember we did
my
that?
Gosh.
We did a piece about children and infants. We've done work on diabetes. We've talked about food insecurity and security. And now, we're going. When you listen to the people who are going to be organizing it, well, they've organized it, but they're going to run it. And I'm going to let them tell you about it right now, because it's a day called Indigenous Health Day. And we're hoping to get a number of speakers to come and be part of Aboriginal Voices in the through July. Okay, so yeah. We'll go to that now.
Hi, I'm Sarah Funnell. I'm an urban family physician here in Kingston.
My name is Jamaica Cass. I am a rural family physician in Tyendinaga.
We are both First Nations physicians. And we are co-chairs of the Advisory Committee for the Indigenous Health Day, Understanding, Respecting, and Transforming Care.
This is a full day continuing professional development event through Queen's Health Sciences to educate our interprofessional colleagues on Indigenous ways of knowing and health throughout the life cycle.
We have an amazing lineup of speakers, including Indigenous dietitians, midwives, nurses, cultural experts, What else, Jamaica?
And diabetes educators who will be presenting with some of our Western healthcare colleagues to provide a truly two-eyed seeing approach to treating Indigenous patients in a culturally safe way throughout the life cycle.
Yeah, I'm excited about this amazing day of education and also the possibility of purchasing some amazing art from the Indigenous Artisans Market as well. It's going to be a great day.
As we welcome vendors from the local Indigenous community, and although we are sold out this year, truly there has been an overwhelming response, and perhaps it's something that we could offer again in the future.
For the city and a hustle on the side. When her son was born, she took a vow to straighten this life out. But the life of a brown woman was a lie she had to live without, live without. Well, Soleil had a fight in her, the same fight in her bloodline. Didn't take shit from the cops. Transition house guidelines. She knew how to call a bluff, had conviction in her doubts. But no one heard a brown woman. Got a lie she had to live without, live without. Troubled white man, discarded like some junk mail with his weekend's beer cans. But she had no dying words in the papers or the press. Just another brown woman, just another red dress.
Anin bojo, jaj hobenese que desnikas, megazido dem, bachuana and donjaba, ojibwe and ishnabe and dao. My name is Shoshona Kish, and I am one of your hosts for A Day to Listen 2023. I'm honored to be speaking to our next guest who plays such a pivotal role in our child welfare system for our children, Dr. Cindy Blackstock. She is the executive director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society and a professor at McGill University School of Social Work. She's been doing this work and advocating for Indigenous children's rights for over 30 years. Cindy, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Thank you. I'm really delighted to be joining you, Shoshona, from unceded Algonquin territory here in Ottawa.
Wonderful. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us where you're from and how you'd like to be known to our audience?
Sure. So my name is Cindy Blackstock. I am from the Gitxsan, which is in northern British Columbia. And I grew up all over northern BC, often in remote and rural communities. And some of my best friends were in the bush through the animals and everything else. So that whole knowledge set is really informed the way that I now look at the world, and I try to do my advocacy for First Nations kids. It's really one that takes into consideration the whole child and where they sit in the family and where they sit in the world, and of course in relationship to the land.
Yes. Do you want to talk about that traditional place of the child in community and relationship to land?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, when they think that elders are the most important people in our nations, but my experience is different. Elders absolutely are honored and respected as knowledge keepers, but their role is actually to support what I view as the most sacred, is the children. The children are the closest to the Creator, and they represent the perpetuity of our cultures in First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities. And that's why the elders play such an important role in passing that knowledge along to them. So they are really, really key to not only ensuring our languages survived, our laws survived, our relations survived, but in looking after the land as well.
Mm-hmm. They really are our future.
I've always said to people, you know, the reason I focus on children is because children are the keepers of the possible.
I love that.
And we have an opportunity to raise a generation of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children that never have to recover from their childhoods and who grow up feeling really proud of who they are and able to make respectful friendships with other persons of difference, and a generation of non-Indigenous kids that don't have to say they're sorry. And that, to me, would be a great gift we could collectively leave as a legacy.
That is a beautiful possibility. And it is something that we can do, you know, and I know that you're working in this profound way, you know, around policy and legislation, but also in terms of connecting with people, because I think this is our time. We get to decide what comes next. We get to decide how we come together as greater communities and what we want our legacy to be, you know, and I think by now most people, you know, across Turtle Island have heard about residential schools. And many have heard about the 60s scoop where Indigenous children were taken from their families and forced into the child welfare system. But many people don't know about the Millennium scoop. Can you talk about that?
What I think people need to know is that First Nations children and young people receive a lot of their funding for public services from the federal government because of an old piece of colonial legislation called the Indian Act, which was used to force First Nations kids into residential schools and is still with us. It's still on the books. So on reserve and in the Yukons, the federal government funds all public services. And that's why we have things with communities without water, or only 35% of First Nations have broadband access. It's really an apartheid public service system. But this has been allowed to continue forever. And then in the wake of residential schools, when the last one closed in 1996, families were left with the post-traumatic trauma, community trauma from the residential schools with far fewer resources to deal with it. And yet, because the public didn't know any better, they judged the families as if they got more, not less than every other Canadian. Hmm. Now, when we were working in the late 1990s, we knew about these inequalities and we wanted to make sure that families had a chance to be able to safely raise their kids and recover from this trauma that affected them. And so we worked on solutions and we found that there were many solutions documenting exactly the same problem, same solutions going back for decades. Canada was routinely choosing not to deal with it. And that meant that we were going to have to turn to the courts to force the government to do it, because there were more children being removed from their homes at that time than at the height of residential schools. And that number has only grown since then because Canada failed to implement the solutions that were already on the books that could have helped kids.
Why do you think that that is? Why do you think that Canada has failed to show up to these critical issues for First Nations children?
I think it's because colonialism is deeply rooted within the Canadian government. But our great hope is that is the Canadian public, because governments don't create change, they respond to change. And in the 6 weeks following the discovery of the children unmarked graves into Kamloops, Eva Jewell and Ian Mosby have said that more TRC calls to action were done in that following 6 weeks than in the previous 6 years. So when Canadians say, look, there's no space for giving First Nations kids less services than everybody else in this country, and they keep on it, then change is going to happen. We've gotten the courts to agree with us that what Canada is doing is racially discriminatory. And there has been some positive action resulting out of those court decisions for First Nations kids. But we're still dealing with things like lack of water, lack of equitable education. And that's where public engagement is really important.
These kinds of conversations are really important because the media moves in these cycles. And sometimes, you know, these really important things don't find themselves in the headlines. And, you know, and I've been thinking about this a lot as the numbers of children are found at residential school sites. And somebody mentioned that that number is over 11,000 at this point. And, you know, and I think that we need to keep the conversation alive so that that change can happen. As soon as the silence falls across everything again, then we're in big trouble.
Yeah. Dr. Bryce, who back in 1907, found that Canada was underfunding so severely, quote, Indian health services. And there are such bad health practices in the schools that that was leading to children dying at a rate of 50% per year. And that was covered by national newspapers at that time. And then headlines would be like, children are dying like flies, absolute inattention to bare necessities of health. And the government chose not to implement those reforms. And a lot of those children then ended up unnecessarily in those unmarked graves. Other children joined them because of abuse and other types of horrendous harms as well. But I've always felt like when the headlines die, the children do too. So every time, one of the things I'd say to the public, every time when you see a gross injustice and you know there's a solution, for example, Canada's lack of action on murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls in 2S plus community, and you look away, that allows for that harm to continue. We have to keep our attention. And when we do, positive change happens.
Yeah, real things become possible. You mentioned an apartheid system, and I had a chance to visit South Africa recently, and many people don't know that the apartheid system in South Africa was in some significant way based on the reserve system in Canada, that, you know, a team of people came here and studied that system and then brought it back there, you know, and I think that it's really important for people to know the history here and the significance of that, because we get to make history now.
That's right. And we more often can more clearly see human rights abuses in other countries than we can at home. And the reason for that is that they become normalized through kind of government propaganda and other things. The opportunity of learning from the past is to learn the lessons, not just the events, and feel guilty. That's not going to get anybody anywhere. But to learn the events in a way that prepares you and your children and others in your circle to actually cast a different type of Canada, one that lives up to the values it says it espouses, of justice, of freedom, of respect, and all these things. It becomes possible because we're courageous enough to embrace the truth. And without the truth, we aren't able to elevate ourselves or create a society that is deserving of all children in this country. So I think that this is very, very important to do.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, and I think that that people in general relate to that, you know, and I think sometimes the weight of of the emotional response to things and feeling a sense of powerlessness in addressing them is really gets in the way for many people. I want to congratulate you on the big news that came recently around your work with Canada's Human Rights Tribunal approving the landmark $23.4 billion settlement for Indigenous children and families harmed by the welfare system. And this is the largest class action settlement in Canadian history. It's very incredible work, Cindy. And I know that there's a federal court that still has to approve it. But if they do, my understanding is that 300,000 people are expected to be compensated. Many of them are children. Yeah. What is the significance of this case for our communities beyond you know, the settlement?
Well, I think one of my messages to Canada is you wouldn't have had to pay any of that had they actually acted on the solutions before we filed the case, because there would have been no victims and therefore no one would have been harmed and by its discrimination, and then it wouldn't have had to be paid. The fact that they were hurt, and in fact, the deaths of some children were linked to Canada's not discrimination. I think it was really important that it be a significant penalty against the Canadian government, because they did this harm on the heels of the residential schools and the 60 scoop, and they repeated it again. They're a repeat offender for our kids. So there needed to be some measure of justice for each of these victims. And that's an acknowledgement that what they went through was wrong. It was illegal behavior on behalf of the government of Canada, and that they matter as an individual. We also need to have the supports in place so that they can, you know, use this money in ways that uplift their lives. So going on to school, or maybe going on the trip for their dreams somewhere, reconnecting with family, all these things that, you know, young people want to do, I think is really, really important. But the major public policy message is that Canada has to choose to do better when it knows better, because otherwise we're all going to pay the price for it. And most importantly, some children are going to pay for their childhoods, and it's not that that's totally unacceptable.
Yes. Yeah. Do you see an impact, a potential impact from this settlement on the Indigenous child welfare system moving forward for kids currently in care?
Yeah, well, one of the big pieces of this is that when we talk to folks who were victimized by Canada's discrimination, their number one goal is to make sure other kids don't go through it. So in addition to this $23.4 billion of compensation, we're working to stop the discrimination and make sure it doesn't happen again. And in that way, we've had something called Jordan's Principle, which we're really honored to work with Jordan River Anderson's family on, and he's a little boy it's named after, which ensures that First Nations children, youth, get the services they need when they need them. There's been over 2 million services provided to kids under Jordan's Principle since the tribunal ruled in 2016. And we've also, since 2018, we were successful with a non-compliance order in getting services out there in child welfare. So more prevention services. In fact, the first significant investment of keeping First Nations children together with their families since Confederation. There's been all kinds of money government has spent to split for children away from their families. This is the first chance to keep them together. And that's in the billions and billions of dollars. But I want to make sure that the discrimination stops, that there are no other victims from Canada's discrimination, and that we actually set in play a relationship going forward where First Nations kids are viewed as being worth the money because they are sacred, like we started our conversation out. Yes. And that way they can grow up healthy and proud.
What can individuals do to create, like, to support that vision for the future and, like, directly impact how things move?
Write to your members of parliament and your members of the legislature. Support Jordan's Principle. Say, look, the day is over for continuing to give First Nations kids less. Let's give them the childhood they deserve. Make sure that when someone comes knocking on your door at election time, I always print out a copy of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action on the murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls calls to justice. And I ask them, I say, what have you personally done to implement these and make a difference? Call your party. I want to know what you've personally done. And if they don't know that, I tell them that they're going to have to come back once they have an answer. Like, these are the things that actually make a difference. Make sure you wear that orange shirt, not just on Orange Shirt Day or when you hear headlines about these children in unmarked graves, but that you do that as many days of the year and wear it into the voting booth. That is really, really important. And we actually even have a calendar families can order. And every month there's something that you can do free of charge with your family or with your community or with your school to implement the TRC's calls to action. I think another thing we were able to achieve with compensation that I'm happy about is that the estates of children and families who died before the compensation was awarded, but who had experienced the discrimination, they will be compensated. And those children in the unmarked graves under the Indian Residential School Assessment, they got nothing. And I think that that's something that needs to be made right. I think that the government of Canada needs to compensate the estates of these young children. And so that's something else to bring to the attention of your member of parliament or your member of the legislature. Most important, there's absolutely things you can do. It's not going to cost you any money. It's not going to take a lot of time, but you can make a world of difference.
Amazing. Cindy, this will air on September 30th. And, you know, the theme for us this year is around Mino Bamatsuin, which in Anishinaabe Mwin means that good road or that good life. And we're talking about that in the context of Indigenous identity and Indigenous excellence. What are you reading? What are you listening to? Who is inspiring you right now?
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, September 30th is also my birthday. So my birthday wish for everybody is that you get onto the website and you do those things to support First Nations kids.
Yes.
In terms of inspiration, one is we're going to be honored to be hosting her 91st birthday, a party next week. And that's the incredible Elaniso Bamsawin. Folks, go onto the National Film Board. You can watch her over 50 documentaries on all kinds of topics on First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples free of charge. In French and in English and often in First Nations languages. Do check her out. For me, of course, Jordan River Anderson and the legacy he left as Jordan's principal and the incredible Shannon Kustachin, who created Shannon's Dream, a teenager from Attawapiskat First Nation who led the largest child rights movement in the country to get what she called safe and comfy schools and equitable education for First Nations kids. And I would also say the non-Indigenous kids who stood with First Nations kids by coming to the tribunal hearings and by writing letters to the government saying, you know, this isn't about charity. This is about justice. And this is about making sure I can grow up in a Canada where First Nations kids don't get left behind again. You know, those are the people of inspiration to me. And I am forever grateful that they're out there. And I hope that they continue to kind of multiply in number.
Cindy, it's been such a pleasure learning from you and talking to you about your incredible work. Chi Miigwech, for all that you are doing for our communities and our kids.
Thank you, Shoshana.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
A Day to Listen, in partnership with the Gord Downie and Cheney Wenjack Fund. Learn how you can take reconciliation action at daytolisten.ca.
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
Hey, 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 this is Disco Rick. We've got a brand new show, Dance Floor Dispatch. We're going to be playing all the best house, electronic, and obviously we're going to be playing some disco. It's every Saturday night at 10 p.m. Tune in at CFRC 101.9.
Did you eat today? If yes, you can thank Ontario Farmland. Ontario Farmland provides local foods and local jobs for millions of Ontarians. But our farmland is under threat. Every day, 319 acres of farmland is lost. Over the past 35 years, 2.8 million acres of farmland have vanished forever. At the Ontario Farmland Trust, we fight to preserve farmland. Visit us at OntarioFarmlandTrust.ca.
My name is Genevieve, and I'll be hosting Peace, Love, and Jenny on CFRC 101.9 FM on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. We'll be exploring everything from pop and soul to funk, jazz, and even a touch of hip-hop. Music that spans decades but all connects through good vibes, peace and love, and of course, a little bit of me, Jenny. See you there!
Brody, welcome to Aboriginal Voices here at CFRC.
Thanks for having me.
No, you're welcome. Great to have you. And you brought your big smile with you today, so that's good. You were excited when we met here at Lake of Bays because you arrived on Thursday night. And the first thing you said to me was?
We went to Shagbark Trail and we saw a bunch of trilliums.
So you were all excited about it. So I said, okay, well, we'll do an interview about it. So tell me a little bit about Shagbark Trail first. Where is it?
So there's this daycare near where I live. And we decided to go over there for Mother's Day. And we started the trail. And I saw one trillium. And then I saw another, and then there was more and more as I kept going. And there were blue flowers and purple flowers and all different sorts of colors that I saw there.
So that was Mother's Day, then it was the Sunday in May?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. And so what was the weather like that day? Sunny, cloudy, windy?
Pretty sunny, but in the morning it was a little bit cloudy.
But so did it, the light filter into the forest floor so you can see really
good
colors?
Yeah, some of the spots there weren't trees, so you could see right through and have a nice view of some of the birds and plants.
You know, here we are sitting outside and we've got a chipmunk chasing around us here. He's gone now. We're sitting on a deck right now. Yeah. Distracted both of us, didn't it? Yeah. Colin, thank you very much for hanging on and keeping them out of the way for us. Yeah. Some of the birds are around too. So if people hear the birds, they know we're outdoors, right? What else did you see when you were in the Shagbark Trail?
We saw blue jays and birds of all sorts and different kinds of trees, like pine trees and maple trees.
Here's a question that one of the people at our station has asked me to ask some of the people who go on trips, and I'm going to ask you this one. What did the forest floor or the forest trees make you feel like? How did you feel when you got into the trees?
calm because it was pretty quiet besides the birds chirping and us rustling our feet, and just really calm. Mm. And it was a little bit windy, so a nice breeze brushing through.
And the other thing that I have, that's how you feel, but when you were doing different kinds of observations, and you just said that, you're looking, you're listening, you know, do you get to touch things in the forest where you were, or did you not touch anything?
Well, there is poison ivy in that forest.
Okay, yeah.
So maybe stay away from that. But, yeah, we touched a few things, but we knew not to pick the trilliums.
Yeah.
Because you can't. But, yeah, we looked at some really cool flowers and looked at some birds, too. But we didn't really touch anything that much.
Okay. You took, or at least your mom took her phone. Did you take some of the pictures?
Yes, yeah. I did.
And so which pictures did you take that you wanted to share with me and our listeners?
So we took, well, I took pictures of, like, purple flowers, mm-hmm, and pink trilliums and white trilliums.
Mm-hmm. They're looking rich. I've got the advantage of looking at the pictures you took. So yeah. these look great.
And then there's the blue ones.
A lot of close-ups, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the blue ones.
Right, blue with yellow centers.
Yes. Took that one too.
Oh, and then who's that with you? In the picture.
My brother and my mom.
Oh, okay. Very good. You make sure you catch all the people who are on the trip with you so you remember what it was all about.
Yeah.
Right? Good. All right. Well, now, if anybody is planning to go to Shagbark Trail in Fort Erie, what would you suggest that they take with them? Because the length of the trip and you know, things you need on the trail, what should they take with them?
Probably bug spray, because there was a little bit, but it was a hot day, so they weren't really out that much. Mm-hmm. But in, like, if you need one, like a walking stick or something.
Okay. Or, like I do.
Yes, because just in case. Right?
Yeah. For me, yes, definitely. It helps me get up if I fall down.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's good. What about drinks or snacks or anything like that? Should people plan to take snacks with them and drinks like water? Or?
Yeah, you can, because some other people build forts with, like, big logs and stuff. And there's little benches. So you could sit on those and have a sort of picnic.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You take peanuts and raisins and maybe something, seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, that'll be one of the projects I'll do with those people who like to be minor chefs, or get out there and how to make their own trail mix or something like that. We'll do that another time. Maybe you can help me with it.
Maybe.
I know you've done chef work, so we can have some fun with that. Especially if it's just a hike. How long did the trip take?
Maybe like an hour.
An hour.
Yeah. Okay.
Was that good length of time for you, or?
Yeah, that's a good length. Yeah.
Anything more than that's too much, do you think, or?
Well, it depends what trail. If I'm having fun, maybe, but if I'm really not, I might just start walking back.
Oh, okay.
Where we started.
Well, Brody, thank you very much for doing this for Aboriginal Voices. And, you know, this has been a fun 10 minutes for me to hear you talk about it. And I'll find an interesting song that I'll put on after this interview. And I'll let you know later when I get back to the station. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye. See you later. Bye, Colin.
nation to the sky, trying to pluck a star. I was hopeful for a while, but they're just a little too far. Round and round I go, where I stop, well, I don't know. Maybe I should fly, gently say goodbye. Someone call an angel down. It's getting too dark here on the ground. Someone call an angel down. Well, I was breathing in my life so deeply, and all the air was stale. Round and round we go, where we stop, well, I don't know. Sky.